This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello and welcome to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Thank you for joining us. We're your hosts. My name is Marcy Davis, and my co-host is my amazing service dog, Fenway. And we're excited to be with you today to talk about our favorite subject, working dogs and working animals. And today we're welcoming two guests to the show, Kyle Lephart and Nikki Brewington. And they're both from Canine Partners of the Rockies. Kyle is the executive director, and Nikki is their client services manager. And they're a nonprofit organization that's based in the United States in the state of Colorado. So come right back after these quick messages as we welcome Kyle Lephart and Nikki Brewington to the show.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Hello, everyone, and hello, Kyle and Nikki, and welcome.
Hi.
Hey, well, I'm so glad you guys could be with us, and both of you, thank you so much. And I just have to say, before we get started, full disclosure, Kyle Lephart is one of my favorite people on the planet, and for so many reasons, but for one of the reasons is because he was one of Fenway's favorite humans also, because Fenway lived with Kyle when he was a puppy in training, when Kyle was the, weren't you the operations director, Kyle, for Assistance Dogs of the West?
Yep, I had a few different jobs there. That was one of them.
Yes, and Fenway was just in love with you. Every time he sees Kyle or hears his voice, he is very happy.
He's one of my favorite dogs.
Thank you for saying that, Kyle. That's what everybody wants to hear, right? That their service dog is the favorite. Of course they are. Well, Kyle, introduce our listeners to Canine Partners of the Rockies. Who are you and what's your mission?
Absolutely. Canine Partners of the Rockies was founded in 2002 by four women who were raising dogs for a national organization, but living in Colorado, and they were looking to see more dogs being placed in Colorado. So they decided to start Canine Partners of the Rockies with the intention of raising dogs in the state to help people in the state. So since that time, we've been providing mobility support service dogs and facility dogs to make an impact on the community that we live in.
Cool. Well, one of the things that I love and admire so much about your program is how you make it so accessible, literally accessible for people with disabilities. Tell us about that, Kyle. How do people apply to get your dogs? Who are the people you serve?
Yeah, so we serve, like I said, we serve Coloradans, but it can look a lot of different ways. So the dogs that we place are doing things like retrieving items, opening doors, turning on lights, helping people get dressed. We really customize the training to support an individual's needs specifically. Our goal is to really provide greater independence for people and higher quality of life. And that can look a number of different ways depending on the individual that's applying. But it's a really customized process so that we are matching the right dog for the right person and figuring out what we need to train that dog for to help that person's specific desires, where they like to go, what they're looking for help on, and what they identify as the best fit for them.
I love that. And what are the most common disabilities that you serve, Kyle?
Could Mickey take that? So she's more involved with the clients, so she can talk about that a lot.
Yeah, there isn't any specific disabilities that we cover, but I will say a lot of our clients have different mobility challenges and diagnoses like MS, or we place dogs with amputees or spinal cord injuries and things like that. Tends to be some of the more common ones that we see, but truly, if you need a dog to help with any kind of mobility things in your life, then that's what we're there to help with.
That's so cool. Well, tell us, Mickey, about your job. What is your role as client services manager? That sounds so official. What does that
I
mean?
know it sounds really official. Really, it just means that I get to hang out with the clients and the applicants and kind of help them through that whole process. I get to be the first person they talk to about service dogs in the organization and kind of help them brainstorm what they're looking for. And then I'm there every step along the way when they get matched with a dog. Through that team training, I'm there just offering a support for the client themselves and see what they need. And then afterwards, it's just me follow-up care that they need with the dog. Do they need any additional training? Did they change their dishwasher and now they want the dog to open the dishwasher or anything like that? So we're there all the way throughout the entire lifetime of that partnership to make sure that they're as successful as possible.
That's so fabulous. Everybody needs a cheerleader. And so that's so wonderful that that's what the main function of your job, it sounds like, Mickey, is to do that. And I know you're phenomenal at that. So tell us, Mickey, about the training process. When somebody applies, what is it? How long does it take? Yeah, give us some insight into that.
It's really hard to say exactly how long it takes because I think you've kind of alluded to the fact that our dogs are super customized to the person. So we don't want a dog to be put in a job that they don't want to do because they're not going to be as successful for that person. But at the same time, we want it to be a personality match. I mean, you're going to be living with this dog, the next 10 years, and we want to make sure that you guys are going to be happy better, that kind of thing. So it can take a couple years, make sure you have the right fit for that. And throughout the process on the client side, you're filling out different lifestyles and expectations form. You meet a couple dogs, figure out who's a good match, and then they come in for team training, which ours is a 2-week team training where they learn everything that dogs learn in 2 years in 2 short weeks, and they bond together. And it's a really special thing to watch someone bond with that dog and learn how to work with a dog throughout that team training process.
Yeah, it's like you're watching magic happen right in front of you every day. Yeah, that it really is. That is so amazing. Well, I love that you say that, Mickey, that about how you look at personalities to make sure it's a good match because it's so true because you're with this canine 24 hours a day. So it's that must be such an important piece. How do you do that?
So we get a lot of information on the front end about what they like to do and what kind of dog they prefer. And then when they come in to meet a few dogs, they'll work with a couple different dogs just to give us an idea of, do you like a dog who's a fast mover, fast thinker? Do you like a dog who thinks for a little bit, moves at a slower pace? Like, what's your kind of style? And then we'll bring them back. And it's one of my favorite days, is the first day that we have them meet potential dogs. Because sometimes it truly is just like watching magic, Marcy. It's You see the couple dogs come in, it's like, well, that could be a fit. And then you see that dog come in, and you see the way that dog reacts to the person and how that person reacts to that dog differently. And it's just so special to watch that and kind of see, like, yeah, this is gonna work.
Yeah, it's like you're watching them fall in love.
It
Yeah.
really is.
That's when you were describing that, Mickey. I was seeing little hearts in the air because that's really what it's like when you're like, ooh, you're so cute. Ooh, yeah, I really like you. Yeah, that twinkle in both of their eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is
It's really
magic.
not just the person, it's the dog too.
That's right. That's what I was thinking too. Yeah, the dog has that twinkle and they smile. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it is pure magic. What a cool job you have. Yeah, and do you guys, Kyle, do you use volunteers to help you with your puppies? Tell us about that.
Yeah, volunteers are critical to our operations. We don't have a kennel facility, and at this point, we don't really want a kennel facility. All of our dogs are raised in volunteer homes, which mimics where they're going to end up. They're going to live in someone's house or apartment or family home. So we want them to grow up in that same atmosphere so they're comfortable. They're getting exposed to typical things that happen in a home environment and not that would normally be happening in a kennel environment. So We want to grow. We want to help more people. But our biggest limitation is we always need more volunteers to give a loving, caring home for our animals.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's the process that somebody can become a puppy raiser?
Sure. So it's an application process similar to what our clients would fill out, where we want to get to know them. We want to get to know their lifestyle, what type of home environment they live in, what their work schedule might be like. And then we try and match them with a dog that might be appropriate for their home or a puppy that could be a good fit to be raised in that type of household. And we would do a home visit to make sure it's safe. And we would do an introduction if they have other dogs or animals in the home. And what we're really just trying to make sure of is that they're comfortable. They have what they need and the tools they need to make it successful. They would come to us for weekly classes so that we can give them training on things to work on and homework for that week. And then we would troubleshoot on anything that they might be struggling with. And we really want to make sure that we're guiding them to make sure the dogs are exposed to things at the right ages, and that they're getting training at the right steps along the way, and that it's a fun, rewarding experience, but also an experience for the dog that's going to be make them successful in their future job.
Well, I love how much support that you're talking about, Kyle, because Mickey talked about all the great support that your clients get, but that's so wonderful of what you do also for your volunteers. Because your puppy raisers, I hear what you're saying. That's critical that you have them and that you have enough of them so that you can serve more people. So how long does a puppy stay in their volunteer's home?
Yeah, so we approach it with about a year commitment. So a dog would be with someone from about 8 weeks old to about 14 months. And then they swap homes and go to a different puppy raiser for that next year, since we have the dog for roughly 2 years home. The reason we do that is it gives the dogs a chance to transition into a new home. So the first time they're transitioning is not into their future current home. They get to practice it once and learn that they can bond with someone new. The second reason we do it is everyone's life is different and everyone's home environment is different. So getting those experiences in different homes allows them to perhaps experience children or cats or someone that might go to the movies or a baseball game versus someone who might do something else with their time. So it gives them more opportunities for that exposure. Since we don't know exactly where they're going to end up, we get to get the feedback from our volunteers about what the dog is comfortable with, where they like to go, so we can have a better idea of where to match them.
Yeah, if we also have volunteers who prefer to have a baby puppy in their home versus have a more finishing training dog. So it kind of gives our volunteers a little more choose your own adventure type of feel.
But. Yeah, that's, well, once again, you guys are tailoring it. Yeah, just like you tailor to your clients. It sounds like you did the same thing for your volunteers.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things about being a smaller company like we are, is we can really tailor the experience each.
That's excellent. That is excellent. Wow. Well, do your volunteer puppy raisers get to meet the clients that their dogs are eventually placed with?
Yeah, like most agencies, we have a graduation ceremony. So, you know, there's the handoff from the puppy raisers to the client. And it's just kind of symbolic of here, the dog is now transitioning over to their job. It gives the puppy raisers a nice chance to say a few words about what it meant to them and some fun memories they had with the dog and to meet the person that they're going to help, which I think is really what makes people want to do this again, where you see the work that you put into the dog and the impact the dog's going to have. That's pretty meaningful for a lot of people.
Yeah, I get goosebumps just hearing you talk about describing that, Kyle. Yeah, because that is so powerful and bringing that full circle. That's so beautiful. Yeah, for everybody, for the volunteer, for the dog, and for the new person that the dog's being placed with. I love that. Yeah. So Mickey, tell us, what kind of dogs do you guys mostly work with?
Right now, we're working with Labrador Retrievers and Golden Retrievers. Usually a mix of the two, to be honest. There tends to be a little bit of Golden in most of our labs, or half and half, and if anything.
Oh, well, those are some of my favorites on the list. Yep. Oh, my goodness. Well, we are going to take just a quick break and hear some important messages from our sponsors, and we love our sponsors, and come right back as we continue to visit with Kyle Lephart and Mickey Brewington from Canine Partners of the Rockies. So come right back.
Has your dog or cat chewed through yet another set of sheets?
I get it. I've been there. But instead of replacing them with more scratchy, low-quality bedding, why not treat yourself to what Oprah and Kris Jenner sleep on every night? It's called Cozy Earth. And yes, it's as dreamy as it sounds. Their bamboo sheets and pajamas are buttery soft, cooling, moisture-wicking, and they actually get softer every time you wash them. I'm talking next-level snuggle mode here, folks. These sheets have been on Oprah's Favorite Things list 7 years in a row, and there's a reason why. Cozy Earth gives you the softest, coolest sleep of your life. And just for Pet Life Radio listeners, I scored you an exclusive 41% off. That's the biggest discount they offer anywhere. Just use promo code PETLIFERADIO at CozyEarth.com and sleep like the celebrity your pet already thinks you are. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code PETLIFERADIO. You'll thank me at bedtime.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. We are visiting today with Kyle Lephart and Mickey Brewington from Canine Partners of the Rockies. And just love hearing all about the incredible work that you two and your team do every day. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Kyle, and one of the things that's so impressive to me about your organization is that you do not charge your clients for their dogs. But I know that it is so expensive for you to train and do all these things that you do with your puppy raisers and with your dogs. So tell us about that, Kyle. What does it really cost to train a service dog?
It's not inexpensive. It's roughly $30,000 to train each dog for the 2 years we have them. We do a lot of health checks, home screenings to make sure that they're healthy. Do obviously a lot of training hours going to every dog. And on top of that, there's a lot of treats. You know, our dogs are like you're working for the work they're doing. So it all adds up and it gets pretty expensive. But we're fortunate that we have a nice donor base that feels passionate about what we're doing. And that allows us to, full disclosure, we charge $50 for an application fee. But in the grand scheme of things, that's it. That it's $50 application fee and we cover the rest, make sure that our services are really accessible to more people.
That's incredible. I mean, at $30,000, I think even that seems very reasonable considering all of the attention and care. And I know our listeners have heard me say a million times, I think of service dogs as like Olympic athletes, but I really do that they have to have the best care, the best food, the best treats. Yeah, all of that. And like you said, that is not inexpensive. As most things related to having a disability, it's very costly, but that's incredible. Do you do a lot of events in the community and other kinds of fundraising things, Kyle?
Yeah, we're always looking for those opportunities. We're out there almost every weekend and often in the evenings. I'm partnering with local organizations and doing different fundraisers, buying for grants and obviously individual donors and all that. As I mentioned, we've got really generous people that get behind what we do. We couldn't do the work without us.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. And thank goodness that there are people that have the love for canines and the love of helping people and seeing what these dogs can do for people. Yeah. Well, another incredible thing about your program, in my opinion, is the work that you do with facility dogs. So, Mickey, can you tell us about that, about what you do with them, about your program and how it's so community-based?
Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit about the clients that we have that have facility dogs, and I'll let Kyle jump on some of the other pieces we do before they're off and fully trained. But we do a lot of different facility-based work where we have dogs that are in like children's hospitals, or we have dogs that are placed in schools or psych offices, anything like that where that dog could be helpful. Again, I know this is kind of a theme, but we tailor the experience for what someone needs. So it's the same with facility dogs. We'll train dogs very specifically if they're going to a hospital versus a prison or versus an individual one-on-one based psychologist's office, you know, things like that. So our dogs are individually trained for each task, and it's really great to see the work they do. We have people come back and be like, oh, yeah, I've met Ike out in the community, and he's wearing her vest. It's been really great to see that.
I think what we do is similar. Again, to our service dogs, is that as the applicants come in, we get to know who they are and what their job entails. And our goal with our dogs is to enhance the services that they're already providing. But what could a dog do to make the experience of the people you're serving better and more impactful? So we talk through with them and let's kind of brainstorm what they might be looking for and if it's something that we could train the dog to do.
We're all about that.
Yeah. It'd be anything from just like having the dog visit on someone's lap, or we have games that the kids can play with dogs to get them more engaged in either that kind of hospital setting or talking through hard things. So they're playing with the dog, different games or little tasks the dog can do with emotional maintaining and things like that. It's really great to see.
Yeah. Well, so Mickey, how do people get a facility dog? Tell us about that application and training process.
Yeah, it's really similar to the service dog application process. We'll go through the same application and we'll have multiple conversations throughout the way with them. We visit their home to make sure that they're all going to be safe and things that we might need to train the dog on. We also are going to visit a place that they work a couple times to kind of see what kind of thing the dog needs to be used to. But also, it's a brainstorming session of like, do you want the dog to play in the sandpit? You know, like, what do you want the dog to be situated? And then we have that two-week team training, or a lot of our facility clients prefer a six-week team training where they come in a couple evenings and work with the dog a little by little. Then at the end of 6 weeks, that's when that dog's fully trained and ready to go out and start working.
Yeah, and yeah. I'll just add with all of our clients, you know, we are Assistance Dogs International accredited, and we want to make sure that we are there for the life of that team and making sure that they're comfortable throughout the time they have the dog. So we will check in regularly. We do annual public access tests to make sure the skills are being kept up. And if their needs change or the desires of what they want the dog to do could alter, we go back planning over that real quick so that they're getting the full impact out of the dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's so brilliant. And what I love too is your process is really leveraging and maximizing the dog's experiences, because Mickey, you go out and do some of this work yourself with your dogs, don't you?
Yeah. So we take the dogs on a lot of different outings to get them used to the environments they might be in. But also whenever I'm going to a home visit or I'm going to visit someone's work, I am bringing the dog with me, you know, because as much as I can see, the dog's going to tell me what they're seeing too. Something that I've noticed is like open trash cans in someone's home. I'm not going to think about it, but that dog pretty quickly.
Woohoo! Yes.
But in the same facility, that dog can really help identify what might be pain point for our training process or think that they could be really useful in wasting all of that.
See, what you might also be touching on is we've developed outreach community programs where we partnered with various institutions in the Denver metro area. So we work with different hospitals, we work with the Veterans Center, we work with some local schools, a Ronald McDonald House, and we do recurring visitations to these facilities. It's while the dogs are still in training, so it's before they're 2 years old and before they've been matched necessarily, but it provides a greater impact on community in general so that we can bring the dogs in for those animal-assisted therapeutic experiences and interactions with people that have been served with these facilities. But it also is beneficial to us because the dogs can practice cues and skills that they might be needing for their future jobs and get exposure to these places that, you know, we don't often go to on a regular basis. But second, it also gives us an idea of what path they might take. We can start to identify, is this a dog who enjoys being in a hospital setting and meeting lots of different people? Or is this a dog who just wants to work the handler that is working with them and they're not really interested in going around to everyone in the room and spending time with them? So we can start to see what path it might take for their job in those ways while also having a greater benefit and impact on the community at large.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Kyle, because I'm so impressed with the new and innovative ways that you guys are really incorporating your dogs and, like you said, tailoring them and making sure that it's what makes everybody happy and meets all their needs. Yeah, that's so beautiful the way you guys are doing that and the way you're impacting the community, because you're working in a lot of different, I mean, Mickey, you mentioned prison environment and hospital environment. I mean, these are a lot of really diverse environments that your dogs are experiencing, which is just making them so much stronger when they're out in the world with someone. That's so cool.
Yeah. Something else I feel like the community partnerships, it kind of teaches us a little more about what those dogs can do in different places. After a dog's placed in a facility, someone will use that dog and learn what works for their job, right? But we don't see a lot of that learning that they do because it becomes natural when you're working with your dog, right? But then whenever we go into some of these hospitals, with the dogs for these community partnerships, you really kind of see like, oh, it'd be really helpful if a dog could learn how to lay on a bed in this way, or very specific things that we can make sure that the experience of those dogs have.
And the other thing I'll add on top of that is some of these facilities have then approached us and said, we need a dog here full time. They see the impact that our dogs that are still in training have, and they realize even if it's a fully trained facility dog at that point, the impact they could have was there.
And they're all the time, yeah.
Well, what advice would you offer, Mickey, someone who's thinking about incorporating a facility dog into their practice or into their organization? Yeah, what would you tell them?
Definitely look into it. If it's something you want to do, there are so many wonderful organizations doing this kind of work, but also it can make such a difference. And working with a dog cold time really is such a special bond that you get to have, and seeing how that dog can kind of help is really...
I think everyone can probably has an example of the time that they left an experience interacting with the dog and felt just so much better afterwards. And so we're just trying to bring that into different facilities to show that they can enhance what you're already doing for people that you're sorting. I think things that facilities might need to think about is who would be taking care of a dog, who would be potentially paying for the cost of caring for that animal, and identifying a structure, way to set it up so that no matter what happens, since these are jocks, these are people that might leave and pursue other careers, how you can continue to have these services provided by the animal, even if a handler might leave. Those are just common things that I'm seeing over the years that people really think about before bringing a dog into a facility, because it is a big commitment and you want to make sure that you are taking care of the animal first and foremost.
Yeah. And I think on that too, like, well, it's so awesome having a dog with you all the time. What else in your life would you have something with you 24/7? You're going to work. You're not really getting a break from your dog. So also thinking through like that kind of experience, is that something you're really looking for?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know as I'm listening to you both talk, I'm thinking about, you know, I've always felt people with disabilities are so lucky because of people like you that train these amazing dogs and place them with us. But you've just expanded that. And so now it's not just people with disabilities who get to have that magic. You've now expanded it much greater to facility dog handlers that can also have that magic, and even more so because they can bring it to their work and see what that does for them professionally. Because it's incredible.
I think there's a lot of staff members at these facilities who experience that secondary trauma of the work.
Yes.
The dogs can provide a benefit to the staff while also benefiting the patients or people that are served in these facilities. So I think there's that kind of dual benefit that we see a lot.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the benefits, in my opinion, are just endless. And it is a ripple effect. They touch so many people. You know, the people that we visited with that are facility dog handlers always say that they're blown away by that impact of staff and family members. And it just is endless, whoever encounters that dog. Well, I could talk to you guys all day, and I know that you are so busy, but I do have another question I want to ask you. And that is, Kyle, I want to ask you, what's the most rewarding thing about your job as executive director of Canine Partners of the Rockies?
That's a good question. So I think like initially you go to I get to be around dogs all day. And so I get to have those benefits of being around an animal. But it's more than that, because it's being around the dogs, but then knowing at the end of that dog's time with us, we're also changing a life. So it's kind of like I get the best of both worlds. I get to have the benefits of animals and people, which is just amazing.
Absolutely. And I got to say, Kyle, you changed my life because of Fenway and what you did for him. You did for me. Yep. It's incredible. Mickey, I want to ask you, what about you? What's your most rewarding thing about your job?
I think it's hard because the dogs are so wonderful, but there are a couple moments where I really feel that magic. And one of them is the first time I'm talking to someone, because the first thing we do, we'll have them send in an inquiry and then I'll give them a call and we talk through and they're like, well, I don't know what a dog could do for me. And I start like naming things a dog could do. And they're like, wow, that would be amazing. I didn't realize that was possible. And just those moments of those kind of brainstorming of like, yeah, but what's the biggest impact we can make, in having it be so immediate like that is so wonderful. It's one of the first moments I really get to talk through service dogs, and I love seeing that.
And seeing the match day where they meet the dogs.
Yeah.
And everybody's on the same page because you saw the spark, you saw the magic happen, and they leave just be so excited about the possibilities for their future.
Yeah, I love that full circle because it does take a couple of years from the time we talked about all these amazing benefits of the dog until they really get nuts with the dog. And so that kind of bookends those really special moments.
And all your hard work pays off. All those nights and weekends and fundraisers and all of that. Yeah, it seems painless when you get to see that, I bet. Yeah. Yeah, that's so amazing and beautiful and wonderful. Well, before you go, tell us how our listeners can get more information about Canine Partners of the Rockies, your website, Facebook, social media. Where can we find you guys?
All of those things. Yeah, our website is cpotr.org, and we are on all the social media platforms. And those are probably the best place to start is checking us out and seeing what we've got going on our website. And following us on social media.
Yeah, that's where we'll get like the events that's going on and get to see all the dogs and their matching processes. Yeah.
Well, what you do is just phenomenal. And it is magic. You are sharing it, experiencing it, and it's incredible. And I just can't thank you both enough for stopping by today to visit with us and give us a little glimpse into the amazing work that you and your organization does every day. So thank you both so, so much. And please come back and visit with us again.
Lars, thanks for having us, Marcy. Give them a kiss for me.
I will. Thank you both. And thank you, our listeners, for being with us. We're so glad you could join us today. And you know that we love to hear from you. So please keep those emails coming with your comments, your ideas for future shows. We'd love to read those. And you know you can reach us at Marcy, M-A-R-C-I-E, at PetLifeRadio.com. So thanks so much for being with us. We look forward to being with you again soon. Take good care.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.